Hi, this is Tracy Swedlow, Editor-in-Chief of Interactive TV Today, and this is Radio ITVT. This is our podcast that we've been doing for about 11 years, where we speak to TV experts, insiders, innovators, technologists, all kinds of people. And today we have the great Zev Neumeyer. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Tracy. Thank you for having me.
Well, really happy that you're here. Zev is the founder of a company called Inscape. And Inscape provides, as they say, glass-level data derived from automatic content recognition, ACR technology, which picks up all kinds of information about how people watch across all platforms. And we thought we'd check in. We haven't spoken to you through Radio ITVT for 2 years or so, maybe a little bit more. And I just thought we would check in, as well as the fact that you are absolutely participating at TVOT. The URL, by the way, is inscape.tv, inscape.tv. So, Zev, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's always good to be back at TVOT, one of my favorite shows in San Francisco.
All right, great. Well, we're happy you're there. Inscape is very, very busy. And, you know, ACR seems to be the new black, right? It sort of was very hot for a while. Then it disappeared when Second Screen as an opportunity to provide, apps that used ACR sort of took a nosedive, but now it's back. And it's becoming, basically currency for the rise of multi-platform, cross-platform television as marketers figure out new ways to manage it, measure it, analyze it, and you're basically providing all of that raw data. Would you say that's a correct observation?
That is 100% correct. We like to think ourselves as the gasoline that powers many other, the entire field of TV measurement. I've said this before, but I think it bears repeating. The three things that make the kind of ACR that we do unique and special and powerful, right, is the quality, right? It detects everything that hits that glass. The fact that it's glass level means that you don't have to go and worry about where the video came from. And its matchability, the ability to take that data set and then match it in combination with any other data set. And then you take those two pieces and it is now useful across the entirety of the TV industry. And what we do is we don't take that data and try to provide one solution. We take that data and enable other companies to go and provide their own independent view of that solution. We do that across the entire market.
And the market that you are pulling that data from is, I guess, 7.7 million smart TV sets, growing towards 8 million, which I believe you say is outside of Samsung's walled garden, 35% of the active smart TV market.
So I hate to correct you, Tracy, but 8.72 as of right now.
Oh, okay, great. It's grown since the last bit of research. All right, fantastic.
They keep selling more TVs. What can I do?
Now, and those, that that number of TVs are for people who have opted in to having their data, sort of observed. They're okay with that, or is this across just all of those TVs and then people can choose out of that particular group?
No, that's a very important point and one that is near and dear to our heart. All of our TVs, the 8.72 that I just mentioned, is 100% opted in to this data. And we make it very easy for them to opt in. We also make it very easy for them to opt out. And so that is not every single TV that Vizio sells, for example. There's a great many TVs that choose not to participate, and that's fine. We only count TVs that are opted in. We don't give any inflated numbers. So those are clean, concrete data sets on their own.
So how many TVs do you have access to if everybody opted in within the Vizio? Of course, you're a subsidiary of Vizio. So how many TVs would you have access to if everybody opted in?
So that's not such a simple question. I don't have a simple answer for that because A, even if people don't opt in, they don't necessarily connect a TV. Yes, it's 2018. Some people still buy a connected TV and just use it as a dumb monitor. And so it's not that simple. But ballpark, we get approximately a 70 to 80% opt-in rate, which is exactly where I want it to be. Right. I don't want it to be too high because that means we're not really giving people an opportunity to opt out. I don't want it to be too low, of course, for obvious reasons. So you can do kind of arithmetic from there on.
It seems to me like that's a great opportunity at the point where they make that decision to opt in or opt out to give them an additional service to see if there's a way to have a relationship with that viewer. Is that something that you would like to pursue? Is there a business opportunity there? I mean, if they're handing over their data, maybe they want something back, or maybe you give them an additional service. What happens?
So Vizio always tries to provide additional services and make the TVs more usable, right? The saying over here is the consumer comes first, right? Our top goal is to make a TV that is really usable to the consumer. And towards that end, Vizio doesn't do a lot of services that's that can be spun as a benefit, but really it's just an exercise to go put more ads on the screen. But that being said, we're also very, very, very clear, right? You can opt into the service about monetizing this data. And if you don't, you're not going to lose any functionality from your television. Right? That is one of our core ethos, right? So any functionality, there is no tit for tat over here. It's like, well, if you want to activate the super great service, you got it. No, none of that business. You can opt in if you're comfortable. You don't have to opt in if you're not comfortable. We try to provide as many useful services on the TV as you can in terms of recommendations for content and in terms of what content is available. But we don't hold the consumer hostage. That's not our way.
There anything in particular that you, the data that you'd like to capture in the future that you can't capture right now?
Not
That you
especially.
think that you think Ace That you think ACR could capture in the future?
Yeah, not especially. I mean, the part of where the exciting things in this company is not so much in terms of figuring out new ways, ways to creep the consumer out. That's not a good way to grow a business. A good way to grow a business is to take the core data set that you have and find new and exciting things to do with it. So I'd actually, for example, for me, right, my goal is that in a couple of years, nobody knows who the heck we are, right? We are just the gasoline that powers all these engines, right? When you, for example, think about buying a car, you're not thinking about buying a car that takes Chevron gas versus somebody else's gas, right? You're thinking about buying a Ford or a GM, right? The gasoline makes all of these things possible, but it's not the thing that's creating the differentiation, right? I want to sell gasoline, and I want my channel partners and my customers to be the ones who get the headlines. So, for example, think of what the Lodomy came up with a story this week, which I thought was really, really cute, right? So Rosen gets canceled, and Lodomy asks, "Does anybody care? Right? Is it the same people watching Rosen today as they were watching last?" And so Lodomy has a good one of our good channel partners. Lodomy has a lot of information about psychographic information and the end demographic information about individual households. And so they went ahead and matched that information with our data set and said, look, the people who watched the original Roseanne show had a very particular demographic profile. And the people who are watch the new Roseanne show had a very different demographic profile. And if you look carefully at the article, what they're kind of hinting at, that new demographic profile are not necessarily people who agree with Roseanne's point of view. And so canceling her show is going to hurt the pocketbooks, but it's not really much of a political statement because a lot of people were watching her show that didn't don't agree with her at all. Right? They were just kind of watching it because it's a bad thing to do. I find those kinds of things exciting. Right. And I guess our data powers that kind of ability. Right. But I don't want to, I don't want to go into Lodomy's business. I just want to keep providing them gasoline so they can go ahead and push it forward.
I thought of a word for you, glassoline.
Gasoline. I was going with
I just
napalm.
looked that
That has too explosive.
I think there's a rock and roll band or something called Glasoline, so you might not be able
Oh,
to use
damn
that. But
it.
anyway, look it up. But I want to go back actually to the past to find why you did work on this technology or invent the technology, and why you decided to stay in the business of providing the data but not provide the other services that your customers are providing, like Lotame and iSpot and 4C, providing all the measurement and the insights, who then have those relationships with the advertisers themselves or the the marketers. Why stay in the data business? What's exciting for you?
So that's a good question, right? What's exciting for me is to make the business grow in the most logical fashion possible, right? I'm not in this for any castle building or personal fame. So the logical thing to do when you have when you're a data provider like us, right, is to go ahead and do the job that nobody else can do. Right, the defend where we provide strategic competitive assets. Right, nobody else can provide this kind of data, or very few players can provide the data set that we provide. You have to be integrated into the OEM. The barriers of entry are very high. This is a highly patented area. Right, the market doesn't bear lots and lots and lots of players in this. The market really will only bear one or two large data providers, and so. This is an area where we can add a lot of value that is genuinely difficult. This is a very difficult business to run, right? We scale up and down many hundreds of servers a day. We have hotlines into AWS. This is not an easy thing to do, and this is where we can create a strategic competitive asset, right? We can do it. It's very hard for other people who can do it. We can go ahead and charge for it. Where we don't provide a strategic competitive asset is to go vertical into the market. Let's say, for argument's sake, we could open up a retargeting service. We could, right? There are other players in this market that have attempted to do such a thing. But so could half a dozen other people. There is no barrier to entry to create the retargeting service. And more so, I'm then exposed to systematic, to, sorry, to non-systematic risk of, who knows, maybe the television industry goes down the path of retargeting, and maybe it doesn't. Right. I could, for example, provide an audience buying and selling platform. I could. But again, so can a great many other people. And again, I'm exposing myself to non-systematic risk of maybe they don't want my audiences. Maybe they want their own audiences. Maybe they want to use first-party data. Maybe they don't want to use first-party data. Right. So you think about what, for example, OpenAP and Nielsen is doing. They're saying, you will use my audiences. And maybe they're right. And maybe they're wrong. Right. But for me to grow the business, the best opportunity I have, the chessboard dictates that I should stick to that part of the business where I provide value but nobody else can service it. And then activate my data through as many bets on the table as I can without actually having to take any of that risk. Or since I live in San Francisco, I have to use the gold miner analogy. There's a gold rush. A lot of gold miners are going to go to the mountains to mine for gold. Some of them will come with gold. Some of them will get eaten by bears. But I am the schmuck in San Francisco who's selling all these gold miners' jeans. We're selling them jeans. Like, they're the ones who are trying to come up with the, they're the ones who are trying to come up with making a, with making the television, with revolutionizing the television industry. And some of them will succeed, and some of them will fail miserably. And some of them will fail miserably not because their idea is wrong, but just because, such is life.
So there's been various announcements recently about how the broadcasters are starting to really explore the use of this data. There were articles in the Wall Street Journal and elsewhere talking about how iSpot was able to use your data. But it was more about what iSpot was doing. And so, yes, in some ways, you're kind of like a white label service underneath all of this,
We
right?
love those, by the way. Those are my favorite kind. The best article in the universe is the one that shows that my channel partners using my data are kicking ass and taking names or doing all these cool, wonderful things. And maybe we get a mention on the bottom of powered by Inscape Data. I am perfectly cool with that. Right? Because in the end of the day, when they succeed, I succeed.
And so when you see that the broadcasters are sort of putting their toe in the water and offering what they're calling outcome guarantees versus Nielsen rating guarantees, where if people don't get certain ratings that they've been that promised, that the broadcasters, the marketers will give them additional inventory and all kinds of other things to satiate them, but outcome guarantees are actually based on real data, conversion, and hardcore measurement. They say they're just sort of getting into that business. How long do you think it will take for all of these broadcasters sort of turn on the light and realize that this is the way to go? What's your prediction for how long it's going to take till it's the mainstream way of doing things?
So I think I've said this before. In 100 years from now, right? If we're not selling ads based 100% data driven, right? Based on outcome, then I'm completely out of my rocker. So somewhere between now and 100 years from now, that transition will happen. When? The world is littered with people who have successfully managed to underestimate the television industry's ability to stay stubborn. It does look it, to me, it's a no-brainer, right? Why should you not sell ads on outcome? On the contrary, right? Like in the universe it's fairly easy for me to see a universe where you're bidding for ad inventory, right? Based 100% not only on the outcome of who sees the ad, but on the outcome of what that ad moves the needle for you. There is nothing stopping a brand today. From say, let's say for example, cars. That's the easiest one to imagine. There's nothing stopping a car brand today from measuring the actual outcome of exposure to their ads to people showing up at the dealership. That's a loop that you can close even in 2018, right? And at that point, do they really care what demo they're hitting? No, they don't. They care how many cars they sell, and they can totally do that. And when you get into other brands like let's say McDonald's, which our dear friend Jonathan Stoyer has always said, well, anybody with a mouth is their customer. Well, maybe that's a little harder, but still, I mean, you can measure exposures to advertising to purchasing behavior, right? Are they buying Big Macs or are they buying the salad, right? So the world is definitely going in that direction. What makes me excited about it is, unlike the previous data sets, right? Unlike, let's say, Nielsen, that dictates from the top to the industry, you will use this measurement, you will use these audiences, and it inherently stifles competition in that fashion. Our data, anybody can use our glasoline, sorry, right? So when we go ahead and activate, yet another reason, by the way, why we don't go vertical, right? When we go ahead and activate, we activate our data on the buy side. We activate our data on the sell side. We activate our data on the ad tech side. And so all of a sudden, that creates competition in the market for different people with different ideas. And so when I'm seeing the universe where a buyer comes to NBC and says, I would like to buy the following inventory, I'm not going to tell you why. I just want to buy it because I have some data that says that's valuable. And NBC goes, holy shit, Taki Mushrooms, what is going on here? I better go get my own data to go figure out why it is that they're trying to buy this remnant inventory in the middle of the night that they didn't want to look at before, right? That kind of back and forth is really, in the end of the day, what's going to change this market. It's not going to be a bunch of guys in a boardroom somewhere. It is going to be because somebody's going to come and say, I'm willing to bid $3 for this inventory that you think is only worth $2. I'm not going to tell you why.
I would say that as much as you are selling it to all of these marketers, the sell and the buy side, what about the consumers? Have you had any inquiries from companies who want to provide data and new services to consumers directly and monetize, like that? I mean, I know if I had access to all sorts of applications that would allow me to play along with the show or trivia. I mean, look at the success of HQ, or do something that would allow me to participate with a group of people while I'm watching a particular network. I'd pay for that. Why not tap into the consumers? My prediction, and the reason why I bring that up, is that something like that, this a success with consumer apps that are generating real revenue based on data, apps that use your data, might convince the marketers that there are more opportunities to be had, and that might turn the needle, move the needle. What do you think?
It could be. I mean, back a couple of years ago, right, we ran quite a few of these with LG, right? We famously ran the Showtime's app on LG, where they did Homeland and several other shows. They even got an Emmy for it, right? We ran this thing for, what was the name of that sci-fi show, the one in St. Louis, when they have the arch, it's broken in the middle, and yet the arch doesn't fall down. I could never see that show because that one thing just broke realism for me. You know what I'm talking about?
No, but I'm going to look it up as soon as Defiance. That's
Defiance,
right.
Defiance. Yeah, they have the St. Louis arch. St. Louis arch is broken. I'm like, people, did you not learn in school how arches work?
I didn't learn that in school, but that's an interesting question.
You
go ahead.
If you take a piece of an arch out, the whole arch will fall down. That's how arches work.
All right.
Anyways, that totally broke the fourth wall for me on that show. It broke my suspension of disbelief. So anyways, we did those, and with some mild success. It's not that some consumers really liked it, and a lot of consumers said, whatever, right? If you think about it, I think that universe has morphed more towards the retargeting space. So if you think what retargeters are doing, they're kind of going directly to the consumer. They're going, hey, consumer, I know that you're really interested in a cruise, and I know that you have been exposed to, I don't know, 16 cruise commercials in the past. I mean, the cruise that you take on the ship, right? In the past 2 days, I have this great offer for half off of Disney Cruise, and I'm going to give that to you. And that's a benefit to the consumer because the consumer actually is interested in that particular offer, right? And so that's, I think, the direction that those direct-to-the-consumer pieces have gone today, right? Will they go towards the direction of more actual heavy interaction with the show? Could be, right? In the end of the day, the consumer's in charge. They can choose to use this stuff or not.
I mean, it seems to me like that's a clear example of for the potential of interactive TV if the viewer has access to, data, but somebody's managing it. It seems like a great opportunity. But all right, maybe that's for the future. By the way, there's a specific fact that we haven't brought up. I know, like we said, that you are owned by Vizio, but you also have a deal with an unnamed European OEM. Are you willing to say who that is?
Not quite yet, but we do indeed have a deal with an unnamed European OEM, and we will be launching in Europe sometime this year. As I am sure has occurred to you, GDPR has thrown the entirety of Europe into a very slow and a steady kind of thing. And for us, we've always been the blue chips of privacy and of respecting and putting the consumer first. And so we're going to take Europe slow and steady, step by step, brick by brick, and make sure that whatever it is we're doing, we're making sure that we're putting the consumers first, and not not rushing into something and forgetting that piece.
I hear you on that. The whole GDPR thing has obviously impacted U.S. industries here. Us, we have to put out a new type of subscriber, document on our websites. It's slowing everybody down. But if that's what needs to be done, it has to be done. But American markets are growing here fast and furiously. And of course, we're going to be talking a lot about the rise of ATSC 3.0, which will help the local broadcasting market grow in new ways and become more interactive. Are you interested in and where that might go? I mean, that's going to be a whole new set of customers, perhaps. Correct? Local television, yes. Local broadcasters?
Yep. Look, as far as I'm concerned, my data is the gasoline that helps other people create strife and controversy in the television industry. I like strife and controversy. ATSC 3.0, as far as I'm concerned, is a shot across the bow from the local broadcasters to the nationals. And we're going to do something different. We're going to stay relevant in this day where anybody can go on OTT and download their favorite games from ESPN.com. I have zero idea whether it will be successful or not, but I don't care. That's not a place where I'm placing my bet. Where I am placing my bet is that somebody somewhere will win and somebody else somewhere will lose, and the both of those sides will buy my data for that.
Can you imagine any types of opportunities for innovation there for marketers to take advantage of?
In terms of what? In terms of ATC3?
Yeah, like how would you, like what would you recommend to marketers to take advantage of that particular new opportunity? I mean, do you provide that kind of insight?
One of the important things that it does, aside of course from writing on 4K and whatnot, is allow the marketers to go back and to do the interactive television bit that they've been dreaming about for a bit. So there is a possibility where ATC3 gives marketers the ability to allow activation on their ads, right? Click here to get more info, something like that. Whether that goes and sees the light of day is one question. Whether consumers will accept it is another good question. I will point out that if and when people choose to go down that path, again, they'll be much more, they will greatly benefit from ad layering on top of that ACR data, right? Because what you want to know is not just that at this exact moment, a television is watching my given ad and be able to do something about it, right? That's about half the pie. What you want to know is every single other ad that television has watched. And that's where ACR data comes in. Right? Kind of key to my ethos, I don't try to solve all the problems of the world. I try to solve the problems of the world, the one problem of the world that I can solve better than anybody else. Right? And let people go ahead and use that data in conjunction with what they already have. So I don't see ATC3, for example, as being a non-complementary technology. You can do a great many things with ATC3. You can do those things better when you layer ACR data on top of it, right? That's the way that we view the world.
How big is this operation? How many servers, or can you sort of describe how massive this is? It must be, like you said, very difficult to do, very complex. And then the second question is when you do pull this data, are you organizing it in by show, by network? Is in some kind of raw form that then you deliver to your third-party customers, then they pull all that data apart? I mean, to what extent do you organize that data and then hand it over? So it's true. A two-part question.
Yeah, so part one, pretty big. One of the things that makes our ACR technology useful is that we get pings from the television. It's a fingerprint, it's a video fingerprint-based technology, right? And so we get pings from the television multiple times a second. Right, so for the entire life the television is on, it's continuously pinging our servers. Well, you got almost 9 million TVs. That's a lot of pings and requires a lot of servers, right, to continuously manage the state of all those televisions. And we do detections in real time, right? So every single time a television is on and it sends a ping to the server has to go take that ping and go and process it and go update the status of the detection and go save all that information into a big-ass database where it can go ahead and be queried. So that operation in and of itself is not a trivial thing. It is a good thing that it is very fortuitous. When I started this company about 10 years ago is exactly when cloud computing started to rise, because this would not work without cloud. We spin up and down hundreds of servers every day. I mean, that's, to me, again, if you asked me that 10 years ago, that would be insane. And by the way, 10 years ago, when I originally started proposing this idea, the most common criticism I got was, "This will never scale. Are you out of your bloody mind? Nobody has that many. You're not going to buy hundreds of servers. Get out of here." That was the most common complaint. And look, at the time, it was a fair complaint, right? Without cloud computing, this would not see the light of day. The answer to the second question is, we generally organize the data by a device and a piece of content, right? So device number 5278, right? And again, remember, we don't know who's behind the device, and we don't care, right? For us, it's device number 5278, completely anonymized. Device number 5278 watched, let's go pick on Roseanne again. Roseanne between 5 and 5:07, at which point they went and they watched the three, you know, commercial numbers Q, commercial number Z, and then they went and watched Seinfeld episode number 52 for whatever, right? That's the way that we transaction the data. And then we take that, and we don't care, by the way, how that video got to the television, right? So we're not, for example, listening on a channel and can only tell you that they're watching, you know, this channel. We are letting you, what we do is we detect the actual piece of content, right? So you know for a fact they're watching this episode of Roseanne, right? Whether they watched the linear on the channel, or whether they got the Blu-ray, or whether they got over there doing, whether they ripped it off of YouTube and are now watching it from a laptop connected to the TV. I am primarily interested in the, I'm first and primarily interested in the actual content that they watched. Right. So if you're looking for a television that has watched, I don't know, 16 instances of the Disney Cruise commercial, right, then you can know with certainty that they watched 16 instances of the Disney Cruise commercial. That is the piece of content that they watched. Right. And then we also attribute it to where it came from. Right. So in the case of the Disney Cruise commercial, right, did they watch it on the linear channel, right, off their antenna, or did they watch it from a cable box, or did they watch it from a VOD service, etc.? I mean, they clearly didn't watch it from, you know, from Netflix or anything like that. But if they watched it from one of the ad supported OTT services, so.
You're not necessarily in the business of determining whether or not they're an actual subscriber of Netflix, or they have, you know, recorded some Netflix content and played it on a different TV. You're not there to deal with DRM issues or to figure
correct.
Out.
We are, you know, not there to deal with DRM issues. This is not something. Okay. This is not something that is strategically competitive assets for us. There are other approaches to DRM that makes a lot more sense than this.
What's coming up next? Are there any announcements coming up in the next 6 months?
Well, if I were telling you right now, then they wouldn't be an announcement if they came up in 6 months, now would they?
I know. But, you know, are there things coming down the pike that you can hint at, perhaps? Maybe not.
My ability to put, as my wife tells me all the time, my ability to predict the future is somewhere between zilch and none at all. Or rather, I can predict the future very well. I'm just wrong all the time. I have a very strong negative correlation to accuracy when I predict the future. One of the things I can tell you what we have seen in the past couple of months and what appears to be growing, and I think you talked about it earlier, is about the outcome-based buying. Right? We have seen NBC announce, and iSpot was mentioned in that announcement in the Wall Street Journal, that they are going down the path of outcome-based buying. And again, by the way, it's our data powering that, right, to some extent. So for us, that's a wonderful. A&E announced that they are working with both Data Plus Math and again iSpot, and again both of those are channel partners that they're both using our data to again do outcome-based buying, and I think there's going to be a lot more of that this year. Right, I think the market has finally come to a conclusion that they better start going down that path, or else. So I think that's where we're going to see the most amount of acceleration.
And one more question. You mentioned earlier that, you know, that you had an interesting observation about the Roseanne show, that the people who were actually watching her show weren't necessarily politically aligned with her. And, you know, and I'm kind of curious, you must get to see a lot of interesting things about how people watch television. Do you have any specific anecdotes that, you know, something that surprised you, or specific observations about things that you think people might be curious about?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, like, running this business, you learn a lot about the American psyche that is very subtle, right? The Americans have a very special relationship with their television in the way that they don't really have with many other devices. I think it has a lot to do with when television showed up, showed up in history, when the American nation was reforming in its modern state after World War II. But yeah, people, what makes television data very interesting is that it almost never changes. So when it does, it has very meaningful effects. So my favorite anecdote is when the hurricane was ravaging Florida, right? And we will look, and for not surprisingly, that one day, the Weather Channel was number one. That in and of itself, by the way, is remarkable. I don't think that has ever in the history of this country has ever happened. The Weather Channel was number one for the day. And okay, that makes sense. But when we looked at where it was number one, you would have expected to be number one along the southeast. I mean, I grew up in Atlanta, Georgia. So whenever a hurricane hit Florida, we would get the tail of it. And so we would watch the Weather Channel to make sure, you know, to see when it was going to rain. So I expected the Weather Channel to be number one in Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, up to Virginia, but it wasn't. It was number one all the way up on the East Coast, all the way in the Midwest, right? So people in Chicago are sitting there watching the Weather Channel, right, as the hurricane is coming into Florida. And this is real time as the hurricane is coming in. And we can see the televisions in Florida shutting down as they start losing power, which is kind of like surrealistic. And it was number one in the entire country, with the exception of Los Angeles. You can read whatever you want into that. Right. All the way up into Portland and Oregon. And then all of a sudden, it drops off the map. And we're like, what happened? And then we look at it again. Football came on. You can read whatever you want into that.
Well, that's a very interesting observation. It'd be great to have more of those sort of recorded and presented. It'd be a good magazine or online blog or something. But anyway, thank you so much, Zev. I really appreciate it. There's so much going on. Like I said, the data is not only the gasoline, but it's the blood. You know, it's that this industry is going to, you know, survive on and thrive on. And I'm assuming that this will be a way for more and more companies, third-party customers like that you've already named, and others to explore and to figure out, you know, new ways, new apps to provide the marketers as well as customers. That was my suggestion earlier. I think there's a lot of opportunity here. So thank you so much for giving us the inside story.
I think there is. I agree with you. I mean, if you want to go revolutionize the TV industry, we'll sell you some gasoline.
We'll have to put that in a bumper sticker. All right. Thank you so much, Zev. I appreciate it.
Nice, the TV industry. Thank you, Tracy.
Thank you. Inscape is INSCAPE.TV. And stay tuned because Zev will be speaking at TVOT on... Actually, I need to bring up the names of the sessions. But you can find the sessions he'll be on at TVOTshow.com. And... of sessions listed there. I'll tell you exactly where you'll be. You'll be on a session called ACR and Measurement, and that will be at 11:05. And you will also be on a session called TV Data of Today. That's with the moderator will be Long Huang of Merkle. So that'll be great. Thank you so much. This is Tracy Swedlow, and be sure to go to tvotshow.com/register-TVOT because the event's coming up June 13th and 14th. Take care.